Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. This is Tom Amello. I'm on the backstretch once again for another in our Capital OTB summer series of podcasts. This afternoon, I'm talking to Tom Bellhouse, Vice President with West Point Thoroughbreds. Tom and I and West Point Thoroughbreds, we go so far back. Terry Finley actually had hair when I met him. And yes, ladies and gentlemen, Terry Finley, you know, is the major domo at West Point Thoroughbreds. And you're familiar with West Point. Back in the day when Nick Kling and I had track facts on the network, we were very fortunate to have a connection to West Point, and we grew along with them, or maybe I could say they grew along with us.
Absolutely.
And absolutely participated in promotions long before there were partnership promotions on TV or anywhere. So without further ado, I want to introduce you all and bring to the microphone Tom Bellhouse. And the first thing I'd ask Tom, you're not a native Saratogian.
I am not. I
tell your story.
Sure. I grew up as a boy on Long Island. My parents originally both from the island, and as I tell people, both my sets of grandparents lived in Nassau County. One lived in Oceanside, and the other lived in Franklin Square.
Uh-oh.
Exactly 2 miles on the N6 bus down Hempstead Turnpike to Belmont Park. And I loved horses as a boy, rode horses as a boy, and a next-door neighbor who was like a second dad to me, used to love to go to Roosevelt Raceway. And I'd go with him and his wife sometimes because I used to love watching Stan Bergstein and Spencer Ross on the... Actually, it was Stan Bergstein and Dave Johnson back in the day, then Spencer Ross on racing from Roosevelt and Yonkers.
On WPIX Channel 9.
Something like that, yeah. And I would go, and I loved it, and I learned how to handicap as, 12, 13 years old, and then my uncle, Pete Bellhouse, took me to Belmont Park for the first time. It was the 4th of July, and I got to see Forgo run.
Oh.
And being near the paddock and seeing the size of thoroughbreds compared to some of the horses I had ridden, it was just absolute love at first sight. And really, since the whole rest of my life, it's been a passion that's never gone away. I've done a lot of other things in my life, but I really have never lost a passion for racing. And my dad worked for United Airlines his whole career, 42 years with United, and got transferred to Chicago. They centralized the whole company in 1980, and in 1981, our whole family, we called it the mutiny, we all moved to Chicago begrudgingly. I was out there for about 8 months. I finished high school and then came back east to go to college up in Oswego, up on Lake Ontario. And that's kind of where my labor of love with Saratoga began, because I would come from come to Saratoga from Oswego just for overnight trips and weekend trips. Then it became my vacation trip. And in 2004, I actually moved here permanently. Met my wife at that time. My wife, probably about 10 years ago, up here. And this is home for me now.
That's a terrific story. It's funny. I'm in the bed and breakfast business, and I really enjoy talking to people and understanding the fact that very few lives are linear, if you will. You almost need some sort of an anchor reason to be in one place and stay there all the time, or be in one position all the time.
Sure.
And most of the time, we just tack. Now, you said something that I'm interested in beyond the bulk of this conversation. Your dad and your grandparents taught you how to handicap. So tell me, what did they tell you about?
Let me make it clear. It was not my dad.
Okay.
It was my Uncle Pete.
Okay.
He's my godfather. My Uncle Pete taught me a lot of my favorite things in life,
okay,
none of which my dad wishes I had learned. I always joke, my dad was the oldest. He was the Marine. And my Uncle Pete was the flyboy, the Air Force guy.
Okay.
So Uncle Pete was a longtime bachelor, married my Aunt Kathy later in life, and had children later in life, whereas my dad and mom were fairly young when they got married and raised a family. And so my dad was strict, and we lived a very nice life out in Suffolk County, but my Uncle Pete was the fun guy. My dad worked all the time. He wasn't fun. Uncle Pete was fun. But really what he did was he introduced, back then they called it the telly, the DRF, and just, I was a kid who loved math in school, and still to this day love puzzles. I've become a pick five player, avid pick five player. Sometimes that'll be the only play I'll make during the day is the two pick fives, because I really do look at it as a puzzle. I think most of us can pick, if you pick enough horses in a race, you're going to come up with a horse that might win. It's putting that puzzle together that fits your budget, that you can try to maximize your opinion.
It goes from a puzzle to a construction job. So, Uncle Pete, by the way, I had an Uncle Iggy.
Okay.
my Uncle Iggy. My father was the serious one. I'll tell you a story about those two crazies in a bit. But everybody should have an Uncle Pete.
Absolutely.
And I'm hopeful that most folks have. And there's an irony of the game. The Uncle Pete's of the world, or the Aunt Mary's of the world, used to take us to the track with them. Mm-hmm. And that's not happening like it used to.
Right.
And there's a part of me that says that somehow the industry needs to think about a way to become the surrogate for that.
Sure, sure. And listen, it's there's really an amazing element to being at the track live versus watching it on TV or watching it at a simulcast center. When you see the faces, like I'm out here on the backstretch probably 5 days a week, and you bring people out, and you actually, if they can gain an appreciation for the animal,
mm-hmm.
just actually see the animal in and see how incredibly majestic and how big and strong and athletic they are. I always tell people there's like what I call the 10-80-10 rule with partners. There'll be 10% of the partners who you might call a carrot feeder, that loves the animal so much, wants to feed it carrots, and doesn't really even care if it ever runs. They just love to be around their horse.
More like a pet.
And then there's 10% or the hardcore gambler, like the horse that has three legs, I don't care, I want it to run, and they're horrible partners. But 80% of the people are ones that love the wagering, love the animals, and really love the whole experience. And the more that we can get people out to the races, and I know that it's a challenge to the whole industry and has been for a long time, but I think that when you look at what's gone on with NYRA, especially this year, and offering as many different options and activities and things up here in Saratoga, I think over time we're on the right path.
I would strongly agree. That Saratoga is part of the culture of the region, mm-hmm. not just the city of Saratoga. And so I'm going to say there's, let's say, a three-hour ride window where the notion of coming to a racetrack such as this, in this kind of setting, is really part of the culture. And unfortunately, the other venues around the country lack what draws people to Saratoga. Plus, it's a vacation destination. And so, I don't know how you bottle what we do here and the way we do it, or massage it in such a way that other venues in other states, even downstate, can try to bring it to the culture. We're a ball culture. When did you hit your first baseball or soccer ball or throw basketball? What age?
Yeah, probably five.
Okay, so we're a ball culture. In Europe, England, Ireland, the meets are every 2 weeks, and they travel around the country and so on. And so the thoroughbred is much more part of the culture. And, your business, the partnership business, is trying to instill that culture in the people that you get to meet. So let's talk a little bit about where West Point started, and how it's evolved to where you guys are today as the gold standard, if you will, which is a great tagline.
Great tagline, yeah. The company started 27 years ago with Terry and Debbie Finley. Terry was still active duty at the time, fulfilling his commitment as an Army officer. He had planned on retiring from the Army. As of his last year, the conflict in Kuwait came up and basically froze him in for another year, and if I'm not mistaken. And during that time, he had claimed his first racehorse. So here he is, now he's back in, he's in Kuwait, and Debbie, his wife, their first horse, a horse named Sunbelt, ran at Philadelphia Park and won, of course, the first race. We have the photo in our, yeah, in our office, and Aaron, who's Aaron Birkenauer, Aaron Finley Birkenauer, who's our racing manager, was a baby, and lo and behold, I mean, that's how it started.
That,
and
that's a magic start and a great story. And in all the years I've known Terry, I don't know Debbie as well. I've not heard that. He was abroad at the time.
Yeah. All right. With the very limited phone access as well. But really, I think the first 10 years or so, it was, you know, I think we all credit Cott Campbell of Dogwood for being the father of our industry, of really putting together the concept of the public partnership. Him and his wife, Ann, developed this concept. And I think there's been a number of us over the years who've tried to take that baton and do some things with it. And West Point probably, I always think back, I got involved, I was a friend of Terry's back in the late 90s and the 2000s. I got involved as a partner in 2003, 2004. I was working as a director for a division of Chrysler based down in New York. Wasn't loving life, loved the job, but I didn't, I was living down by the city. I'd grown up down there and lived in Oswego for 20 years. I wasn't looking forward to moving back down by the city. And really, I was traveling a lot for work, and I, it was something missing. And you know, the opportunity to get involved in thoroughbred ownership, and through this thing called West Point, which I discovered on this new thing called the World Wide Web. Terry was one of the first people ever to have a website, and I, you know, when the web started, I found it, and we, you know, probably befriended each other at least 5 years before I ever jumped in. And when I did, it was an experience, and the company was just about, in 2004, was just about to ready to break through. We had a horse named Seattle Fitz that won the Brooklyn.
Who trained?
Kieran McLaughlin.
Kieran.
Well, the relationship with Dallas Stewart and Kieran McLaughlin at that time really brought a legitimacy to the company. It had been somewhat regional before. We'd done work with a number of other trainers, but when Kieran came back to the States, and the relationship with Dallas had just started blossoming. Now we had a couple of, Dallas had just won the Breeders' Cup, I think, a few years before. Kieran was coming by storm, and he wins the Belmont Stakes, and all of a sudden things are really starting to come together. So Seattle Fitz was a cool horse. He won the Brooklyn. He ran in the Whitney. He became a stallion, a small stallion. And that was 2004. And then 2006, you get Flashy Bull, the first starter in the Breeders' Cup. And at that point, we'd been in business, I want to say, at least 15 years, and he'd never had a Grade 1 win. And it was just one of those things that, you know, some of our, you might call, competitors' line was, well, Terry Finley must be a really nice guy because his horses don't win, but people still buy into his partnerships. And that was obviously a low blow, but it was one of those that stuck with us. And then, lo and behold, in 2007, Flashy Bull wins the Foster. We have a beautiful three-year-old filly named Dream Rush, possibly the greatest horse we've ever owned, talent-wise. She won the Prioress and the Test. Rags to Riches ran against a filly named Lear's Princess.
Yeah.
Was a Lear fan filly that Terry and Buzz bought, Buzz Chase bought for practically nothing, and she became a Grade 1 winner. She had run second in the Alabama, second or third in the coaching club, and then they tried her on against Rags to Riches, and we won the Grade 1 in the Gazelle. So all of a sudden, we've never had a Grade 1 winner. We have Irish Smoke wins the Spinaway. So inside of 4 months, we went from no Grade 1 wins to five grade one wins.
I want to say this to you. I honestly believe that one of the hardest things to do on the planet is win a horse race.
Yeah.
A plain, ordinary horse race. 16,000 claimer, up, right? Well, if it's that hard just to win a race on a Wednesday card, how difficult is it to get someone fit, ready, and have everything right to get a grade one? And anybody who mocks anybody for not making it isn't really thinking straight when that crosses their
path. I'd go as far as, you know how hard it is to get it in the starting gate for the first time. I tell partners all the time, running in your first race with a young horse is half the battle.
Yeah.
Just to get them to the race. Angel Cordello used to say that. He goes, just getting them into the race to start their first time is more than half the battle.
Yeah.
And I believe that. And as far as, you know, that year became magical. Then we head to the Breeders' Cup at Monmouth with five horses, two of which were favored, and then the monsoon hit. And,
right.
You know, but really that changed the culture of the company. I think we started really moving forward with the quality that we were buying. And then, of course, what happens in 2008, 2009, the market crashes, and the whole world changes. But it was really I'm glad that I lived that. And some of the younger people in our company, they might look at our revenue from those years, and it's probably half of what it was now.
Sure.
And I can promise you it was a lot harder to do that number then than it has been to do the numbers now.
Well, you know what they say about coaching, and I don't care what the sport is, you probably do your best coaching when you have your weakest players.
Absolutely.
It's somewhat easier to have stars. You just sort of got to stay out of it.
The part is, it's a different type of, when you have that kind of clustered success.
Yeah.
Fortunately for us, the year after that, Macho again came on the scene, and Awesome Gem. So Awesome Gem had run third in the Breeders' Cup, and Macho again ran second in the Preakness. You know, you talk about a horse. I mean, Macho again, people say, oh yeah, he's the horse that ran second to Rachel Alexandra in the Woodward. Macho again, he wins the, used to be called the Derby Trial.
Right.
Okay, the week before the Derby, Pat Day Mile now. But runs second to Big Down in the Preakness, wins the Jim Dandy, beats Pyro at 10-1 here, one of my favorite days.
Oh.
Had a horrific trip, almost got killed in the Traverse. Big pile up on the turn.
Right.
Comes back, runs second in the Super Derby, which was big, $1 million race,
yeah,
back then. Comes back as a four-year-old, wins the New Orleans Handicap, wins the Stephen Foster, runs second in the Whitney to Bulls Bay, and then runs second in the Woodward to Rachel. I mean, what a great partnership horse. You know, he just danced every dance. He didn't win every time, but, God, he was fun. And Awesome Gem was the same way on the West Coast. I mean, and those were the two horses that I tell people, in a way, they hit a lot of our warts. Because as far as anybody on the outside who's not really super following you, they just see that you got a horse in a graded stake every 2 months, you know. And but in the meantime, we were struggling, and you know, the quality of the horses, we thought we were buying good horses, and it just, things just weren't really flying. And but over the course of, you know, of time, things start to rally back, and you get a couple of good breaks, and you get a couple of nice horses, and new alliances, as you know, we talked about earlier.
Yeah, I want to get to that as well. We seem to be on the cusp, well past the beginning of kind of a new model of partnerships. And ownership.
Absolutely.
And, let's put it this way. There was the Churchill Club that was, mm-hmm, right? And now we have the Empire Racing Club here, which is a way to give ownership and access to lots of folks. But at your level of the game, it seems that we've moved somewhat away from one partner owning one horse, or two or three partners wholly owning a horse, or even the partnership wholly owning the horse, and which has brought, you know, some question. For example, you know, we've had a couple of grade one races, mm-hmm, where for half the field are part owned by, you know, by the same three or four,
sure,
guys. So let's just talk about that as an evolving model, the good and the bad of it.
Right. The positive, you know, I think it's probably about, the one that comes to mind was probably about 4 or 5 years ago. The Belmont winner was bought at the Fasig Tipton sale by Bob LaPenta and Eclipse.
Okay.
And that was really the first time I saw two heavy hitters who normally probably would be bidding against each other partnering up. And I'm sure there's been lots of other ones in the past, sure. But that one stuck in my head because it was, you know, there was a little bit of a, there is in some people's mind a little disdain of partnerships. Like I tease all the time, a lot of people want Terry Finley to be their partner, but I'm not sure they really want West Point Thoroughbreds to be a partner, you know? But that's how it is. You know, we're a package deal. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I look at, you know, Vino Rosso is a perfect example. Mike Rapoli and St. Elias, Vinny Viola. You're looking at two of the power players in the game who 10 years ago would have been bidding against each other, who have now a friendship. And I guess the guy who's probably crying the most is the guy who was selling the horse originally, because now these guys aren't bidding against each other. They're partnering up.
Well, maybe those guys all got together. The guys with the money all got together over a cup of coffee or a light libation and said, why the hell are we bidding against each other?
Sure. We're at OBS March. There's a Tappet colt now named Chestertown who was the star of the show, right? Artemis Agritera was the dam, grade one mare, unbelievably athletic colt, breeze like the wind. So he ends up going for $2 million. Well, Terry, this was the most expensive horse West Point ever bought. But he also had a discussion and a long-time relationship with Chester Bowman, who had told him that if you buy the horse, I'll stay in to a certain degree. Well, then, while you're putting that deal together, whether you're going to bid on it, you had two other guys on the phone like, hey, I'd be in for 10% up to this or 20% up to this. And, you know, as you're putting this together in the deal, so he's not going blind up here like the old days where I'm going to buy a horse and I got no bullets. And I think that happens far more now than it ever did before.
So it sounds to me a lot like the films I've seen about the NFL draft.
Exactly.
or NBA draft, if you will. All sorts of talking around in the back room and with
if you do this, I'll do that. You know,
with well and for that. So, how do you see it all going forward? Do you see this as the new model?
I do. I do. I think that listen, this, everybody who's involved in horse racing knows it's a numbers game. We buy, let's say, 30 horses a year, in hopes that, let's say, 10 are what we dream they'll be.
Mm-hmm.
Oh. And if that were the case, we'd be way, way, way ahead of the industry average. You know, that means 20 that we buy probably aren't going to be what we hope.
Of course.
So the more swings you get at this, the better your chance for success. And I think from West Point's point of view, we've been willing to relinquish control with the right partner. We never, 5 years ago, we never would have bought in on a horse if we weren't at least 50% owner where we had some say.
How do those conversations go in this concept as opposed to the other? Because, I remember, because you guys were kind enough the other days to give me access to the site, the letter would go out to the partners, you'd look for some feedback, and you guys would make the call.
Right.
Okay. Does that still describe what goes on?
Yeah, I mean,
how different is it?
Now we as a company we use something called Salesforce.com.
Yes.
It's our contact management system. One of the features of Salesforce.com is something called Chatter, and Chatter is a resource where all of our partners are welcome to join it and communicate with us as well as communicate with each other. So it gives them a forum. Like someone says, well, I don't feel I have a say. Listen, you have an open forum. And
say what you want when you want.
Say what you want when you want it. At times, you know, I was very skeptical. Do you ever really in business want all your customers talking to each other? But it's been very self-policing, and it provides a level of transparency for us that I believe is second to none. You know, you can not be happy with the results that happen, or you know, I always say, pick a trainer, and I'll tell you who's in the soup with the partners right now. And then they win the two races, and then they're back. Everybody's in love, you know.
But it loves a winner.
Well, of course. But you know, the program doesn't change. It's you know, it's sometimes it's not the right horse, and sometimes we just get unlucky. But really, coming back to that, Terry is the managing partner of West Point Thoroughbreds. The buck stops with him. Erin is the racing manager, Erin Birkenauer. She speaks with, you know, she goes over every horse, studies condition books, finds state. I mean, nothing gets past her in that regard. And she communicates with our trainers on a weekly basis to run through each horse, talk about what's next, what we should do. Should we even change circuits sometimes? Our horse is not up to this circuit. We need to maybe go to the Mid-Atlantic or things like that to really maximize. But I really do believe that what separates us is the partner has that capability to share, not only on the phone or via text with Terry, myself, or anyone else in the company, but also in a public forum to say to their other partners, hey, this is what I feel. And it's really, I think it's made a difference for us.
All right. That's very, so Salesforce, that's...
it's a software.
A web, okay. All right.
The cloud.
Oh, yeah, I'm cloudy right now. It wouldn't be a conversation with you if I didn't ask you, with several weeks left in this meet, to mention some horses in the barn or some trips that you've seen, something from the handicapping standpoint. How many more runs do you think you're going to get?
We've only had 8, and I would have told you I expected to have close to 30 for the meet. We'll just have to see. It's been a little funny. We've had a couple races not go. We've got a couple horses, that babies that looked ready that might not be as ready as we thought. But you know, looking forward, this weekend we're going to enter the run in the Adirondack. We bought a minority piece of Miss Pepina with Gary Gullo,
okay,
and Bob Peterson. So that we're excited about that. As far as babies go, I mean, George Weaver has a cool horse named Instinctive Rhythm. He's a horse that I hope that we'll see before the end of the meet. Christophe Clement has a horse named Decorated Invader that ran second.
Oh, man.
He's...
What a pedigree.
He's spectacular.
What a pedigree, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's turf the nines.
Yeah. And he runs good on dirt, too. That's the funny part.
Okay.
But he's a really, really neat horse.
He
ran a beautiful second. Irad got off him and just said, this horse is a star. And, you know, so we were really happy. And we just look to do our thing with him. And, you know, he's the kind of horse that when they run like that now, and you never want to get ahead of yourself, get over your skis, as they say. But, you know, we're only a few months from the Breeders' Cup. So to work backwards, like if we were able to break our maiden here, there's races like the Winning You're In, the Summer Stakes up at Woodbine or, you know, down in New York. And
his effort on debut, portends something like that. Now, before we close, I would be remiss if I didn't have this conversation with you. I think one of the most interesting, one of the greatest pieces of audio ever recorded for racing was the Sherm call to the office. And I don't know, every time I see some from West Point, I ask, why isn't the Sherm call somewhere in your repertoire of, so why don't you just explain the Sherm call to our audience, and then we'll say goodbye.
Sherm Cunningham is a gentleman from Toronto, Canada. Massive horse racing fan, big presence up in the jockey club up there in Toronto. Whenever you go to Woodbine, you could ask anybody, is Sherm here today? And they'll introduce you. Huge horse racing fan, comes to all the Triple Crown events, comes to the Breeders' Cup. Well, Sherm, we bought a horse, his name was Get Down. And he was running, he was trained by Nancy Triola. Nancy and her husband Bobby, she was an assistant to Rick Violet, went up to Canada. And so Get Down is about to run in his debut race at Woodbine. And Sherm thinks he has Rich Cristiano on the phone give him, because Rich couldn't be there, to give him a live call of the race. Well, what Sherm doesn't realize is he's gotten Richie's voicemail. Richie's phone went right to voicemail. And he goes in to call the race as only he could. Where okay, we're on the outside, we're sitting fourth, we're sitting, well, he's going okay, and he, of course, I'm not doing the Canadian accent any justice, but, and, oh my God, he's in third, and he's in second, he's gonna take the lead, it's him in the three and the four, and he's gonna win this race, and all of a sudden he just starts screaming, and thank God, Richie was able to save it on his voicemail, and they were able to tape it, and it's really one of the greatest calls that you ever could hear in your lifetime of somebody of what is horse racing about.
And what is what sharing it is. And you know, I keep saying what we have to sell in this industry is either owning a piece of for real or owning a piece for a minute 10 seconds of a horse who's in the run to the wire. There is nothing next to
that. You're really trying to get people to take emotional ownership.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what I talk about a lot. And that goes back to, you know, for us, it goes back to Commanding Curve. When Commanding Curve ran second to California Chrome, my whole outlook on what we do changed because there were so many people who didn't own the horse, really were just somehow, like the Kevin Bacon, six
right.
degrees of separate,
yep.
where they felt connected to this horse. Like my niece's friend, like my friend Nicole's Uncle Tommy is involved with, and it's just like all these people felt, and he was an exciting horse. He'd come from the clouds.
Yeah,
and,
but he's winning when he's running.
But I really have encouraged our partners and other people as well, take emotional possession of the whole stable. You might only own one horse or two horses, but you know, let these be your colors. Let this be your team that, you know, some people are Mets or Yankee fans or Giants or Jet fans or Red Sox or whatever, but let, when you're in horse racing, I want West Point to be my team.
That's terrific. Tom, I want to thank you for giving us the time. I want to thank Terry Finley for allowing you to come. And I would say to folks that if you're here at Saratoga and you recognize Tom Bauhaus, say hello. He'd be happy to talk with you about racing or anything else. We want to thank you very much for joining us, and we'll be back next week. And actually, our host, our guest next week will be Tom Law from the Saratoga Special. So thank you for joining. Have a great racing day and a great racing week.